Vila Vitar.
Televisió d'Ogo. Good morning, everyone. Hello. Thank you for being here in Paradiso on this beautiful day. I am Dragan Klaić, and I will moderate this panel with my distinguished friends and colleagues, whom I will introduce in a moment. I just want to say this is the fourth panel in a series that has been going on this whole month, organized by Felix Meritis, Paradiso, and Goethe Institute Amsterdam, Deutschland in Europa, in Deutschland. It was preceded by a panel, Deutschland neu definiert, a panel, Jeder ist ein Ausländer, everyone is a foreigner, Europa, Europa, and today we have a rather cryptic, provoking title for our discussion, Die Reflexion ist am Ende, die Zukunft gehört der Kunst, a quote from an interview of Heiner Müller, the reflection is at the end, the future belongs to the art. We will see what can we make out of this statement and how we can toss it and turn it around and distort it, I guess. Allow me to introduce now all the participants from my right to my left. First is Boris Groys, originally from Russia, from Moscow, for quite a few years now in Germany, teaching philosophy and art and writing about modern art at the University of Münster. Next to him is Hannes Böhringer, who have been teaching at the Berlin University, Freie University Berlin, for many years now, teaching in Kassel, also editor of Art and Cultural Affairs review Daedalus. Then Andrei Bitov from St. Petersburg, author, writer, president of the Russian PEN. Next to me, George Conrad, writer, president, international president of PEN, novelist from Budapest. Then Heiner Müller, playwright from Berlin. Jan-Jolis Lamars, theater director and designer from Amsterdam. And finally, another Amsterdamer, Peter Schaat, composer. We are a mixed company of people who do art and think and write about art, and we do come from quite a few countries, and some of us have been changing countries and relocating and moving. I am now an Amsterdamer, but until very recently I was a Belgradian, if I may say so. So we have very different cultural backgrounds and different experiences, and now we have to see what does it mean. The reflection is at the end and the future belongs to the art. And one way to approach this subject would be to start from a very personal angle, to start from our own position and our own experience at the given moment, in the given circumstances where we live and work. To start, in other words, from the point of view of our own dilemmas and everyday choices, to see whether this statement that sounds quite optimistic, almost utopian, what kind of sense, what kind of meaning it could have in our own personal lives. So I'd like to ask Boris Groys to break the ice.
Thank you.
But you have to speak up, Boris, quite close to the microphone. We have also cameras. I hope you are not bothered by the lighting. This is the minimal lighting necessary to have a video and recording of this talk. Boris.
Well, I try to speak understandable. And you protest if it will be not the case. So I think this statement by Heiner Müller that reflection is at the end and future belongs to the art, that it is a kind of reversal of the Hegelian statement about the end of the art. So in the 19th century, Hegel stated that the art is at the end, and the future belongs to the reflection. The future belongs to the pure thought, to the science, philosophy, pure logical thinking. And it was actually an eternal dream of the philosophy, of the thought, to get through all the art, to get through the cultural science, the cultural forms, and to grasp logically, spiritually, the truth itself, the nature itself, the being itself. And so it was the dream of the German philosophy too. Now, I think that this pure thought, uncontaminated by art, is not more possible, any more possible. And the philosophy itself doesn't believe in it anymore. All that we know about the world is actually mediated through art, is mediated through this cultural science, through this cultural forms, through the writings, through the pictures we see. And in this sense, I also believe that the future belongs to art. I mean, the past belongs to art, the present belongs to art, and the future will belong to art, maybe because we understand more clearly now that it is just a case that we cannot grasp this hidden reality behind the art immediately. But I don't think that it means the stop of the reflection or the end of the thinking. It will still be the thinking, but maybe the thinking about the art, about the production of art, about the consumption and distribution of art, about the condition under which the art is created, social condition, political condition, artistic condition, media condition. And the art itself became much more reflective as before. It became critical and self-critical of its own images and the images of the culture the artists are dealing with. And in a sense, the art itself, the contemporary art, is a form of reflection for me, is a form of criticism and self-reflection. And so I don't believe that there will be a sharp border between art and thinking anymore, because our thought is much more artistic now, and the art is much more reflective now. So I don't believe that the future of the art means the end of the thinking. Rather, I believe that we are much more sensitive now to this impossibility to transcend the art. We are not, as philosophers, as thinkers, and as a society, we are not anymore, have no animosity against art. We see the art as, in a way, main source of our experience.
Thank you, Boris Groys. We'll shift to the other end of the table for a reaction of Peter Schad, who is himself an artist and a creator, and of course his art is reflective, I would imagine. But I would just want to say this is a very open dramaturgy event, so we will come up with some kind of introductory statements, discuss for a while, then make a break in which there will be a chance to pass questions and comments from the audience here on little pieces of paper. I cannot promise that we will have time to handle them all, to answer all of them, so we will probably have to make a certain selection. So try to phrase your questions in the most provocative manner. And then we will, in the second part, after some coffee and drinks and a little bit of a cigarette, whoever needs it, we'll sit down again and go on till 3 o'clock or so. By that time, everyone will be quite exhausted. So, Peter Schad, at the moment, who promised that he will bring into this discussion this polemical nerve that he is so well known for.
Thank you. Well, my first reaction to this text was, does it mean verstand op nul en blik op onheimdig? Which is in Dutch a very well known thing. How would you translate it? Brain on zero.
Don't rely on my Dutch, I'm not that far.
But I know that there's behind on river, there is no question of that interpretation. So I thought I may have to write down what I to find out what I think and to not to take too much of your time. So I wrote it down to clarify my position in this debate. Art is the realm of absolute, unrestrained, and total freedom. Therefore, art has no rulers, ni dieu ni maître, no hierarchy, no politics, no obligations, no hand, and even no morale, or morals, I should say. The arts are undivided. There are no higher or lower arts. A symphony is not better than a pop song. There is only true and false art, like there are only true and false artists, carrier artists. Only the totally obedient and devoted servant of the arts, the absolute faithful lover, can ever hope to become a master of the arts. Like the three largely independent drivers of our triune brain, there are three main disciplines in the arts: the visual, the oral, and the verbal. When they cooperate, which rarely happens successfully, they give birth to an opera, to the voice of the planet, the greatest miracle in our solar system. No art form has suffered more in this century than opera. The 20th century is by far the most heinous, bloodthirsty, and art-hating century of human history. Slowly we are awakening from the great nightmare. The first, second, and cold phases of the 75-year World War 1914-1989, ending with the global police action of the Gulf War. Get out of this century as quickly as possible, is the advice of a popular song. Provided we get out through the front door into the next century, not through a back door into the last century, like so many great talents did, like, for instance, Richard Strauss did. Provided we call an end to all endings, the end of the novel, the end of the symphony, of opera, of the arts, the end of truth, or the end of history. Because there is no end to all that ever worked in the arts. There is no end to melody, to harmony or counterpoint. No great invention of the human brain can ever be uninvented, undone. Unless, of course, that brain should be built to commit global suicide. It is, however, not plausible that nature should have developed its most miraculous instrument to destroy itself. That seems a much too human interpretation of the laws of nature. No one knows what all living things together know. A and no one can tell what knowledge is not worth knowing. There is therefore reason to hope that in the end we can correct our mistakes, that we can analyze our illusions, our stupidity, our bloodthirstiness, that we can clean up our mess. We are experiencing not just the end of a century, not just another family shake, but the end of a millennium. A new millennium is rapidly coming nearer. Thanks to technology, thanks to television, it will be a new beginning on a planetary scale. It will be our first common millennium. Some fear that now the world war is over, the human race will bore itself to death. Those who will not practice, serve, and love the arts surely will. The others, I mean we, shall overcome someday.
Thank you very much, Peter Schat, for this passionate, and I expected it to be passionate, plaidoyer. I turn now to Hans Böhringer to provide another view on this condition on the prospects of the art at the end of a millennium.
I have difficulties with this sentence of Heiner Müller. Reflection has come to an end. The future belongs to art. I ask myself, what kind of art has come to an end, and to which art the future will belong to. My deepest impression in the last 3 years was the breakdown of the Berlin Mauer, because I lived in and still live in West Berlin, and I remember quite well in the first weeks that all my friends who are artists realized, or I had the deep impression, that reality is much more exciting than art. And a lot of artists stopped to make art and had really a lot of difficulties to begin again with doing art. And I thought about it, and I think it stopped when we went to an opening of an exhibition. We didn't talk about the art that we saw. We talk about politics. And I think suddenly we noticed that the art, which had become a discourse on art, an art on art, had been very boring. And perhaps there will be a long way for us. This was a typical German situation, a long way back to normal life, to responsibility, because I, or Well, let me say, we thought that art and culture had become for us a form of compensation of politics, a replacement of the view what's going on in the world. And I think this will change the art production in Germany very deeply, not suddenly, because the art production cannot change so immediately. And I don't think this change will be so primitive that art becomes realistic again. But I think it will change a lot. This was my first idea on the sentence. The second was a philosophical thought. Reflection has come to an end. I think it belongs to the essence of reflection that it is, or that it is in the danger to be endless. It is in the virtual space which has no end. It's the atmosphere of hesitation, of doubting, and you cannot stop reflection because it has an it goes on, and it is an art. It is art to make a stop on reflection, because, for instance, in everyday life, you haven't got enough time to reflect all things. You must come to an end and to decide to do something, to make something. And I think this is the art which we try to do in our everyday life, to be ready when you are not yet ready. You have not come to an end with your reflection.
Thank you, Hannes Böhringer. I appreciate this observation on the enmeshment of arts and politics. In my own personal experience, I have that for years and years, that every premiere is an occasion for political debate, and every art exhibit actually serves as a gathering for political exchange of views or arguments, where I used to live in Belgrade. And yet, what seemed to be a very serious aesthetic debate was in some kind of undercurrent, a political debate. And that has been going on for, I would say, a whole decade, maybe even from the 70s. I turn now to Heiner Müller, whose statements we are trying to decipher and toss around. This enmeshment of arts and politics is, of course, part of your experience as an author throughout all of your careers. But in the rapid changes, in the accelerated change, that in the web of change into which you found yourself caught, where do you find the energy, the reasons for such optimistic outlooks as you are putting forward? Where do you find, where are the reservoirs for this utopianizing that so often characterizes your statements and utterances, Heiner Müller?
One source is whiskey, the other source is cigars.
That sounds very interesting.
It's one thing, you know, these interviews. I'm in a bad situation now. Don't take me too seriously with these interviews. There was a time for some years, 2 years, 3 years, where I couldn't find the time to write. And so I did these interviews. And there was one aspect I
there was a magazine which is out now, Transatlantic, and they offered me 3,000 Deutschmark for one interview. It's a good reason to make an interview. And then I noticed that I didn't want to interview anymore, and there was no material, no stuff, no ideas. From this situation came this provocative sentence, you know. But it's a real problem. I'm not as optimistic or as joyful about the situation as Bilger is or was. For me, it had some other aspects. You know this sentence by Valéry, even the future is not what it has been before. That's one very important aspect of it. And maybe that this sentence, end of reflection and future to the arts, there's some escapism in it, maybe. And the tiredness of politics, of reality. Reality is boring more and more because we have brought up in the East, we have lived there. It's a very strange experience now in Berlin that you go, future is the past in a way. We have this idea in our heads, which has nothing to do with the reality of this socialist, it wasn't what we thought and what we had in mind, but we had an idea. And now it's yes, the past, and the past is the future. And maybe this is one reason for such kind of reflection, about the end of reflection.
Thank you, Heiner Müller. I turn now to Andrei Bitov, who comes from St. Petersburg, came the other day to Amsterdam, where I would imagine optimism is in short supply. What does it mean to when Peter Schatz says the art is free? I have to add yes, but are the artists free? And what kind of limitations, what kind of difficult choices the artists are facing? How do you feel in your existence and your life as an artist, as a writer, as an intellectual in Russia, in terms of choices that have to be made, dilemmas that sort of are forced on you?
You see, as I received this very late possibility to compare myself with anybody from another world, I came to a very easy conclusion that's just the same. There is no real difference. We only dream that there is another world where is a lot of freedom for artists and he's independent, etc., etc. But the same, the question of quality will be the first, and it's our struggle for freedom, it's struggle for our quality, it's our independence, it's the same. All the obstacles can be different. And now, what can I say serious? Because, maybe it's struggle for paper now in Russia, not for the word even. The paper became so expensive that one have to think how to make it with his hands or to find some kind of production before he'll start to write. We have really another problems, but we are just the same. I see no difference in position of artists now. How to speak, for instance, about all these ends, we discussed a month ago or 2 months ago or in the end of last year, almost in the same group in Bucharest, the end of history. Now we're discussing the end of reflection. I remember that before that it was the end of future. Maybe it's a question of European geography, just to change place in order to find another end. we are just inside of the problem of the end of the last great empire in the world, and well, it's the same huge as the 1/6 of the world. Yes, the problem is rather huge. And the end of empire, well, maybe I'll dream even wider, and because the reasons for any kind of optimism are also more difficult. Maybe I'll think that we are coming to the end of imperialistic thinking as a representatives of human mankind, not only as a representatives of Soviet Union, but as human beings, we were imperialists in different cases in our attitude to nature, to each other, to all kind of systems. We were imperialists, and I wonder what is the reason for our politicians, who are not intellectuals at all in any country, to find a common language at last before intellectuals manage to find it. And sometimes I think that something horrible is coming. There is no another reason for them to find the same language. What is the reason for all these disarmaments and failure of big structures? And as not a kind of changing mind of human being as a total, in total understanding. Maybe we have a good, nice hole in the heavens, and they have a feeling like these Japanese fishes about earthquake, and they are just in a hurry not to lose their power. And we are discussing that we are departed. We are not departed at all. And if to reflect the absence of reflection, maybe, well, it's very popular, this Shakespeare's words about the mirror which is brought on the road. I wonder what happened to the mirror. Maybe we need the second mirror to go in parallel, or it's broken in thousands of pieces, and in every piece we'll see our personal end. But my optimism is that we'll soon receive another common task than, because we've lost this comfortable position of living in different systems, but we'll live in one world, in one's air, in one space. And then though these ecological slogans, they became also boring, and they were told they are old-fashioned a little bit, but and I am afraid that they can be less green than brown, but still we'll have another problems. And the art, well, we have difficulties in using foreign words in Russia. It's became great fashion to use all kind of unknown words, as market, for instance. Nobody knows what is it, and our currency, we've never seen it, etc., etc. And I like this well, romantic feeling of another words, but if to translate back the word reflection to the Russian language, is quite widely used. Maybe it's used quite in another meaning. Maybe you mean in reflection something else than we do. But I know there is a very important machine in Russia called reflector. It's to warm the air. It's the most popular in, well, among common, so-called common people. And we have such a proverb that well, the usually it's for about fools, not practical people, that they are doing something so unpractically that they are warming the air, warming the street. And it seems to me that's the only task for art, to be such kind of reflectors, if not to reflect anything. And we are warming the streets through all our life, and it's not a bad occupation, because we will be never concerned as practical people.
Thank you, Andrei Bito. I turn now to someone who lives in a different set of circumstances, Jan-Joris Lammers. What could you say as a professional theater artist? What has changed in your work these last couple of years of great realignment of Europe, shaken and reshaped? Has that affected your work and the way you think of your work?
Yes, we do only German plays. Yes, it's true. I didn't think about this. But when I was thinking about this statement of Heino Müller, I realized German plays. I don't know. That's my reflection. I'm a reflector. So I'm an actor, so I'm a reflector. And he is saying, end of reflection, then it's the end of the actor. And and the art, is an actor an artist? Yes, when he is a reflector. So that's the only thing I can say about this sentence. And why we do German plays, I don't know. It's a feeling. We're playing now Tasso, and we are planning to play Handke, and we play Schnitzler, and all in our way, in an, I don't know if there is any difference with before or after the war or something, but it's a choice, and I don't know about this choice.
Thank you. And finally, I turn to George Conrad. You went through, when I think back 35 years ago, through the 35 years you went through many upheavals of your country, of Hungarian society and Hungarian culture that affected you personally in a most direct manner. Your life must have changed tremendously in the last couple of years, but I would imagine you do find yourself as a Hungarian author, someone living in Hungary. I'm not talking now about you as in your capacity of international president of PEN, but as a Hungarian author, under considerable pressures, I would imagine, and demands for taking a position, making a stance, speaking up, giving your support, stating your preference. How is that affecting your work and your position?
I try to do my best. I try to hide myself when it is possible, and I have to participate sometimes when I feel that it's my duty. And who knows what is my duty? Who knows what is our duty? Everybody somehow feels. Sometimes I'm wrong and I say, my God, what did I do? It was completely superfluous to go there and to participate. I wasted a whole day with the stupidity. And in time of the accelerated politics, there are many words. People are terribly wordy. And the consumption of words is stronger. And there is a new verbalism because people have the feeling that now they can express themselves, had the feeling, and told and told and told, what could they tell? That they aren't happy. They aren't happy and that they have many complaints, and there are some people who are maybe responsible for that, that they lost a lot. What did they lose? They lost maybe many years, if years can be interpreted as a whole, as a package, and then you can have the feeling that you lost your package, you lost 40 years, you lost 50 years. And as the human life is not so terribly long, people can feel that they lost their whole life. And it's a kind of political rhetorics which is quite easy, and in the journalistic language it's very expanded. And then these generalistic condemnations of the past involve ourselves too, so then we all are somehow sinners of living in the past, which is now sentenced to moral death. I don't feel now the urgence to participate in this moralization, in this political moralization of the memory, because somehow I was not such an engaged supporter of the regime, but however I don't feel that I had only pains and sufferings. In the contrary, I enjoyed my life as I could, because I feel that it's our only task somehow to appreciate our life, which is here and now, and this now is the best time of our life, and nothing is ended and nothing is starting. We live in the continuity and we have a small piece of it. Why not to make a form from it? And it's quite an independent work, and the circumstances can, good or bad, generally they are not very nice, but somehow the interesting task is to surpass them, to survive them, however to defend yourself, and defend yourself also to defend a kind of happiness. A happiness of the reflection, for example. Reflection. What is reflection? Art. Kunst is reflection. Reflection is comeback, memory. When I'm doing something, maybe I pour a glass of water, then I am busy with this gesture. I am in action. But if I would like to draw a hand pouring water in the glass, I have to stop my activity. So it's the reflection on that what happened, on that what I did. And maybe the reflection in the way what we say, what we name artistic, following many prejudices, what we have, it means metaphorical expression, a kind of other linearity, because we have to fulfill the time, and what is the accepted and the canonized continuity of the way of thinking. How can we step from one thing to the other, and how can the reader or the film watcher or the music listener follow the artist or the writer in the real adventure of the work, does go from one point to the other. So probably the reflection on this special and personal linearity between decisions, because what do we do in the art? We decide instead of one word, another word, cut here the phrase or go further. Rejection of one thing and attraction or nostalgia for another topic or sensual thing or idea. So from these decisions you can read out a kind of strategy. And our life has a strategy what we can draw as a line, and we will understand it, of course, only a posteriori, afterwards. Therefore, the older people in their memory come back and understand what they did and what happened to them when they were younger. So I believe that this reflection is even the movement of the human spirit, the normal movement, and I agree completely with Heiner Müller that maybe not only the future, but maybe the present time belongs to the art. To realize the present time, to understand, to recognize, to see the now, to see the other person who is on the other side of the table or the canal in the Sunday morning. And as we don't have another chance for this morning, we don't have another this morning, because it will be only the tomorrow morning, we have this responsibility to lose this morning. And therefore, I would say that coming back to the political changes, the political observation and rhetoric and judgment and moralization, everything, can make periods illuminating and brilliant, and can make them dark and full of mourn and death. But these are very superficial cliches. And if I remember on the difficult years of my life, and if I observe my friends and even older people remembering on the difficult years of their life, although these years were really difficult and painful, and I don't have to describe them in details, but I remember that it was a good memory for them, because they survived, because they resisted, because they managed it somehow, because it was also somehow funny, because it was sometimes a common and extraordinary period of their life. If you take, for example, four or five gentlemen in a room around the table, and all of them were in the jail, and all of them were maybe in the same cell or on the same corridor, so they have such kind of scooter memories, and they will make fun reflecting on them around the table with cafe. So the good and the bad